And good morning, friends. Welcome to The Bright Side. I'm pharmacist Ben. And our number today, as it is every day on The Bright Side, 844-236-6010. If you have questions about health, nutrition, or prescription drugs, if you want to wean yourself off your meds and get on a good nutritional supplement program, or if you have a comment or success story you'd like to share, if you want to let us know how you're dealing with Corona Mania, if you have questions about something you may have heard about or read about Corona Mania, about COVID, about the coronavirus, we're here to help you. 844-236-6010. So much confusion, so much misinformation, so much craziness. As a healthcare professional, I can only imagine what the non-healthcare professional, what the layperson, what the person who doesn't really understand their bodies or health and nutrition or immunology or the digestive system or viruses, I can only imagine the confusion that must be going through people's heads to wear a mask, to not wear a mask, to stay inside, to not stay inside, to supplement, to not to supplement, to take drugs, to not to take drugs, to take tests, to get tested, to not get tested. There's so much nonsense out there. It's almost as if the morass, the cloud of unknowing is intentional. It's almost as if this whole thing is about confusion. It's almost about as if this stuff is just to make us go crazy. However, if you do understand the body, if you do understand immunology, if you do understand the rudiments of how to take care of yourself, you will be liberated. You will be free from the anxiety that is affecting most people, as certainly most unaware people. That's what this program is about. It's about sharing information so we can become more powerful, so we can become free, so we can become liberated from the confusion. When you understand the simplicity of how the body works, it's so simple. You eat good, you breathe right, you sleep, you relax, you do the things that we all know we're supposed to be doing, but we don't do. You won't need the medical model. And why it is that we trust the medical model to tell us how to be healthy is just craziness to me. How can the medical model, which has presided over the most epic health crisis in the history of mankind, have the nerve to tell us how to take care of ourselves when it comes to a virus or to tell us anything when it comes to a so-called virus or viral infection or any kind of infection? The nerve of the medical model to tell us how to live our lives to stay healthy when it has presided over the most incredible health disaster in the history of man. The reason why we're dealing with this kind of infectious crisis is because we don't take care of ourselves, and because we're not told how to take care of ourselves, and we're told we don't even need to take care of ourselves as long as we get drugs and surgeries and checkups and whatever it is the medical model purports to provide us to keep us healthy. How dare they tell us what to do? Well, they dare to because most of us don't know what to do, so we abdicate our authority. This program is about taking our authority back. We should always be taking our authority back, but especially when it comes to our health. 844-236-6010 is our number. We've got a cool guest coming up at the bottom of the hour. Margot Lenmark, she is the daughter of an undertaker, and she's written a really cool book about death. And I read it, actually. It's a couple hundred pages, and I read it last night and finished up this morning. It's super easy to read. Just a very compelling tale about what she's learned about death, not just as an undertaker's daughter, but as a spiritual person and as somebody who's experienced death. And, you know, I think this is one of the most important things that we can come to understand about life is death. We're all going to die. And the fear of death runs our lives. The fear of dying is what's behind this whole coronavirus crisis. This is what Sonia Barrett talked about when she was on the program a couple weeks ago. She said it's about the fear of death. Everybody's afraid of death. And so we wear masks and we stay in the house and we don't open the windows. My mother didn't leave her house for 3 months because she was afraid of catching the virus. And this is why I try not to get mad. I try to be calm about this. But the reason I get so ticked off is because people's lives are being ruined by this deceit. Is there a virus? I don't know if there's a virus. Do we need to be medicalized for it? That I know we don't. We do not need to be medicalized. We do not need to be medicalized unless you get hit by a car or a rock hits you on the top of the head, you break a bone, you have some kind of emergency procedure, then you need to have some surgery. And obviously surgery and surgical techniques are a good thing. But the idea that we need to be medicalized back to health and we need to listen to medical authorities to stay healthy does not serve us, period. The four horsemen of this craziness that we're dealing with are the government, the media, the medical model, and and the masses. That's the four horsemen of this crazy, ridiculous, epic, historic event that we're dealing with today. Are the government, the media, the medical model, the media, and the masses. Now, the government's always going to look for domination. Governments are always about control. That's just the way it is. Or should I say that's just the way it's always been, because it doesn't have to be that way. We can have an intelligent, benevolent government. We can have a practical government. We can have a government that really does look out for its people. We don't have to have a government that's about domination and control, but we do. And so the government is like that. And that's just what we have to deal with. Listen to the government if you have to. Don't if you don't have to, because they're usually wrong. Then there's the medical model, which is based on a paradigm that has created the most historic chronic disease health crisis in the history of man, based on the sheer numbers. Diabetes, obesity, cancer, autoimmunity. The United States ranks last or very close to last in industrial countries on almost all health measurement metrics. Infant mortality, obesity, diabetes, cancer. And yet the medical model is going to tell us how to take care of ourselves. The reason people get sick, whether it's a viral infection or whether it's an immune condition of any kind, the reason we get sick is because we don't take care of ourselves. By the way, do you know what most deaths have in common in this of the 125 supposed 130,000 whatever it is now deaths? First of all, as far as that death figure goes, go on the CDC's website. And you'll see that COVID deaths and pneumonia deaths and influenza deaths are all lumped together. So nobody really knows how many COVID deaths there are. That alone should tell you that we're dealing with something that's less than honest. The CDC combines all the deaths. Do you hear that on the news? Do you hear that the 125 or 130,000 people who died from COVID are all, it's a combination figure that lumps in influenza, pneumonia, and COVID? You probably haven't heard that. You got to get on the CDC's website. Interestingly, a lot of the stuff that you're not hearing is right on the CDC's website. If you know how to find it, because it's really tricky to find, and if you know how to read statistics, you'll see deaths are down, infections are up. Who the heck cares about infections? But anyway, the medical models presided over this epic health crisis, and they're the ones telling us how to deal with this thing. Comorbidity is what this thing's all about, and it's always what health challenges are all about. You are going to be at higher risk of getting sick if you have other health challenges. Comorbidity, hospitalization, medicalization is what really accounts for deaths. Comorbidity, having multiple disease states, and most people, the large majority of people in this country have multiple disease states, or if not the large majority, a huge number. And of course, hospitalization and medicalization don't help. Prescription drugs. How many of these people who died in the hospitals, by the way, were on blood thinners, or we're on beta blockers and calcium channel blockers, and off their nutritional supplements? All right, 844-236-6. All right, we're back on the bright side. We've got Margot Lenmark coming up at the bottom of the hour, talking about her book, Late in the Morning. Margot is the daughter of an undertaker and a student of death, as well as life, as well as spirituality. And I read her book last night and this morning, and it is really, really, really good. I'm looking forward to talking to Margot. At the bottom of the hour, we'll get your calls to segment 844-236-6010. I've been a little bit ticked off the last couple of days. What's really getting me is this talk about infections. Infections, infections, infections. Who cares about infections? What you want to know about is symptomatic. And what we want to do is we want to make ourselves unsymptomatic or non-symptomatic, and most people will be, because it's a very weak, quote-unquote, virus. The most important thing you could do for your to protect yourself, to support your immunity, is take care of your gut. The GI, gastrointestinal tract that runs from your mouth to the other end. And if you throw in your nasal passages and your respiratory system and your lungs, which are also all immune, part of the immune system, you got 90% of your immune system. Focus on food, 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 food. The less you eat, the longer you live. The less you eat, the better you feel. And the less we eat, the more powerful and robust our immune system will be. Nobody's saying to starve, but reducing calorie restriction. Calorie restriction is one of the most powerful, if not the most powerful, way to boost your immune system. It allows you to redirect resources, precious resources, I might add, to defense, to repair, to protecting ourselves from viral infections, among other things. That means probiotics. That means digestive enzymes, your nightly essence, your ultimate enzymes, using apple cider vinegar with meals, in addition to calorie restriction. That means using digestive health strategies. And until I hear Rachel Maddow and Sean Hannity and all the other crazy people on the news telling me about the digestive system, or Dr. Fauci or whoever, telling me about working my digestive system, I'm tuning it out. If they're not telling you, if the medical model is not telling you to build your immune system by focusing on digestion, they're either ignorant or they're dishonest. And either way, they don't deserve being listened to. There are herbs you can take for your immune system. One of the best herbs you can take for your immune system is something we used to talk about a lot in the 90s, but I haven't heard a lot about lately, and that's echinacea. There's all kinds of evidence that talks about echinacea as being antiviral, supporting the activity of white blood cells, shortening the duration of respiratory infections, being used for colds, all kinds of respiratory type issues. No one take echinacea all the time, but if you feel like you're getting sick, take a gram or so, get a gram capsule, or make tea, make echinacea tea. I like herbs. People always ask me about herbal supplements. I say make your own. Make teas, make your own capsules for that matter. Another great herb for the immune system is elderberry. I remember a doctor friend of mine telling me about elderberry 25, 30 years ago. He told me about it. He asked me if I knew about elderberry, and I hadn't at the time. But the more I learned about it, the more I realized that elderberry is a great remedy for coughs, colds, as an immune booster. And at the beginning of all this stuff, this whole COVID thing, people were using elderberry. Elderberry is even more powerful as it can be. It's even more powerful when you take it with vitamin A and vitamin C. And by the way, vitamin A and vitamin C and vitamin D are probably your three most important immune vitamins. A and D, of course, are not really vitamins. They're hormones. Get out in the sun, supplement with vitamin A, and make sure you're taking lots of vitamin C. I don't care what anybody tells you about vitamin C not quote unquote working. I don't care what anybody tells you about vitamin C being a waste of time. I say anybody, I mean the medical professionals. It's amazing. Unbelievably valuable. It's the Babe Ruth of vitamins. The Babe Ruth of supplements. The Babe Ruth of essential nutrients. It should be in a category all on its own. George Norrie asked me a couple weeks ago when I was on Beyond Belief. He said, what's the most important vitamin? I was always troubled by that question. What's the most important vitamin? There's no most important. But if you had to say, and this is what I told him, I said vitamin C, unspeakably valuable. I've been using it in skincare for many years, as some of you may know. All right, 844-236-6010 is our number. We got Lenmark coming up at the bottom of the hour. Let's go to the phones. Elaine, my friend Elaine, thank you so much for your posts, Elaine. I really appreciate it.
Hi, and thank you for your truth treatments. I can't believe how much it's helped my skin with those masks. It's just driving me nuts. But the omega.
The omega-6 healing cream,
Yeah.
I should talk more about that, folks. Omega-6 healing cream for the mask. If you're getting, you had a particular bad reaction to the mask, but even just generally dryness or irritation to the mask, omega-6 healing cream, even before the masks, Elaine, if you put it on before your mask, it'll protect you from the interaction, sure. The rubbing, the friction. Yeah. What's going on?
I am done wearing masks, so I have a joke. And a question, but do I have time for a quick joke?
I actually want to hear the joke, but yeah, go ahead real quick, because I want to get to a couple more calls here.
My daughter told me this joke. So did you know that diarrhea is hereditary?
No.
It runs in your genes.
Oh, no.
Oh, man.
Oh, no. Okay, that's worth a chuckle. That is worth
that's
a chuckle.
That's terrible. But on a more serious note, my patient with the supposed lichen planus. She's just very overwhelmed of where do I even start?
Let me tell you where she starts, okay? And this is where you always start. First of all, lichen planus it's kind of like a growth that occurs on in various parts of the body, but especially mucous membranes. Okay, that's the most important. That's the first, just for the listeners who may not have heard of it. It's very unpleasant. It itches. It's not you know, deadly or anything, but it itches and it's unattractive and it's uncomfortable. But the real problem is it's a sign of an immune dysfunction. Period, end of story. That's it. It's an immune dysfunction. We just got through saying 80% of your immune system is in the digestive tract. You know, when I talk about the digestive system for autoimmune disease, and lichen planus isn't quite autoimmune, although nobody's really sure, it could pass, that could be part of it. Whenever you have an immune problem, when I talk about the digestive system, I sometimes think people say, oh, blah, 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 you know, it's food, it's so easy to say. But the fact is your immune system lives in the digestive tract, as would make sense because that's where most of the enemy gets into the body. So focusing on the digestive system is so important, and I'm thinking, Elaine, and you correct me if I'm wrong because you're a healthcare professional too. I'm thinking we dance around this because we don't want to make changes. We'd rather talk about our problems. We'd rather get whatever kind of reaction we get from other people from our problems than do something about our problems. Because it seems so simple to me. This woman should be fasting, period. Okay? I guarantee you, I'm not psychic Ben, I'm pharmacist Ben, but I'm guaranteeing you, she eats like crap and she's got a digestive health issue. Now, you say, no, she only eats organic, she only eats veggies. She doesn't know. We don't know what good eating is, but her skin is talking to us. You know what I'm saying? So you say, oh, no, I'm all organic, I'm gluten-free, la, 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 I hear this all the time. Your skin is talking to you. So you may be saying I'm healthy and I eat healthy, but your skin says different. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So she has to focus on the gut. Okay. It's not a skin problem. Lichen planus is not a skin problem. It's an immune problem, which 80% of the time at least means it's going to be a digestive issue or food issue. Okay? Will you let me know how she does? And you know what else?
Yeah.
She can also contact me if you want me to talk to her directly.
All right. Thank you for all you do.
Thank you, Elaine. Take care. All right. I wanted to get to one more call here, and I'm sorry we're out of time, but we got a cool guest coming up at the bottom of the hour, Margot Lenmark. Her book is Late in the Morning. You're listening to The Bright Side. We'll be back right after this. On the bright side, I'm pharmacist Ben. Thanks for joining us. We're on the air Monday through Friday, 8 to 9 Pacific, 10 to 11 Central Time, and 24/7 on our archive page at brightsideben.com and also our archive page at benfuchsarchives.com. We have a search engine up. Thank you to Peter in the UK for setting that up, and all our longevity products are available at brightsideben.com, pharmacistben.com, and criticalhealthnews.com. And don't forget to check out our Truth Skin Health products at truthtreatments.com. Never any preservatives, fragrances, fillers, waxes, emulsifiers, nothing your skin doesn't need or doesn't want in any of our True Skin Health products, all formulated for wound healing in my compounding pharmacy. As it turns out, when you heal a wound, you beautify the skin. And Truth Treatments are formerly prescription products repurposed for beauty. And man, do they work. If you don't believe me, go to truthreviewed.com. We have over 500 five-star reviews. We've only been collecting them since January. So truthreviewed.com for our reviews, truthtreatments.com for our True Skin Health products, truthtreatments.com, truthtreatments.com. All right. I am so excited to have our guest on. Margot Lenmark is the author of a book called Late in the Morning, and I'm going to let her tell you all about her book, but I'm just going to tell you that, man, what a beautiful, beautiful book, and so many pearls of wisdom. It's really, I cried, I smiled, I learned. It was just a real, real beautiful book, and I'm not surprised that's in the front of the book. There's testimonials from Deepak Chopra and Marcy Shimoff, who also is a great writer, and other folks. And I understand why, because it is really beautiful work. Please welcome to The Bright Side, Margot Lenmark. Hey, Margot.
Hi, Ben. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Oh, I'm so excited to have you on. I feel like I know so much about you. You're like my new friend. Because the way you write is so personal and so it's so vulnerable. It's so revealing. I'm going to let you tell a little bit about the book, but just for the listeners, Margot is an undertaker's daughter, and you were kind of steeped in death from the very beginning, and you have some really interesting stories to tell about that. Did you write the book because you want to teach? Did you write the book because you want to get stuff out of your system? Is it a journal, or is it more for readers? What was your thinking in putting this thing together?
That's a great question. That's a really good question, because I had no intention of writing this book. When my father died, a friend of mine asked me, tell me about the experience of your father dying. How was it? I'm so sorry, blah, blah, blah. So I told him the story, which you know is the first chapter of the book about my father dying. It's quite a story, as you know. Mm-hmm. And at the end of that, she said to me, she was just kind of mesmerized during the story, and I you know, I can't believe how in detail I went, but she pulled it out of me. And at the end, and this is like probably now 22 or 23 years ago, she said, "You have got to write that in a book."
Uh-huh.
And I said to her, "I'm not writing in a book. You just asked me and I told you, you know, no."
Oh, that's great.
And the person I was standing with, and I don't even know who it was, but she made that person I was standing with promise to hold me to writing the book. And I don't even know who it was, but I remember that that person said, "Okay, I promise," you know. Well, then when my brother died about 10 years later, I died too. You know, it just mm-hmm. took me down. And that's when I thought, okay, you know what? I'm going to write a book, because whatever comes out of this now, because I've had so many experiences around death, I thought whatever comes out of this will be my living memorial to my brother. So that's what brought the book about.
See, you just said something very interesting, and I was going to ask you about that. It seems, apparently, that you have always been around death. First of all, you're born an undertaker's daughter, number one. And then you have all these deaths. And they're not just deaths. They're meaningful deaths. Every one of these deaths has a depth to it and has a meaning to it. Do you think that's because of you? Or do you think that's because that's how you see things, because you were raised that way, plus you had that spiritual upbringing that you had? Or do we all have that relationship to death and we just never express it? Or we never look at it the way you did?
Oh, I'm so glad you read the book so you really understand this. Your questions are so amazing. I think the reason I maybe wrote the book, I think it's definitely to me, because that seems to be my gift, to be able to have deep, deep insight into this. But I wrote the book so that other people could have an awareness about it. Mm. So I don't actually know the answer to your question, but I know that people have called me and said, "Oh my God, thank you for opening my eyes. Oh my God, I just feel so differently about it." Or, "I'm not afraid to die." Or, you know, "I've helped people with their grief." And so I think, you know, anything you do like that, when you have an awareness and you share it with other people, it raises their awareness. So I think once you read the book, you see things differently after that.
I think also you're a meditator. And to me, meditation is about seeing with awareness, I'll say. Because we see, but we don't always see with awareness. But you're a meditator, and you have a history of meditation. So you're going to see your life meditatively. You're going to see your life with awareness. So you think that's part of it?
Well, I do.
Your meditation,
I think that's
background?
Part of. Yes, I do. I think part of it, because I do transcendental meditation, and when you transcend, you transcend the surface of the mind, basically, the surface thinking level, and you go to deeper levels of the mind. Mm. And so naturally, you see life in a deeper way. So yes, I do think that that had a great deal to do with my perception of, you know, in all of these experiences.
And you don't just do TM. You travel around the world teaching TM. I mean, you're really in TM, and I love TM, by the way.
Committed.
And I've never done it exactly, but I've been meditating myself for many years. But I've always appreciated TM's real simplicity, the idea of going deeper, like you just said, diving deeper past this. Most of us live our lives on the surface, and we miss the richness of it, number one, and we miss our power and how much control we have over our ability to have a quality life or have a great life. We have an ability to have a great life.
We do, and we miss the richness of death. This is the point, you know, it's so interesting. We think of death as just only grief and sad and loss. But what I found with these experiences is that there is an interwovenness about life and death that is just phenomenal. So if we can go to the deeper levels of life and experience it on that level, we will see death totally differently. Mm. It's a continuum, and we will see it that way. And you know, for example, and you notice this, you know, because every death that I talk about that you say is very personal, because it was a very deep experience for me, and everyone was very different. But the interesting thing is, like, let's just take my brother for example. You know, the lesson that I got from him when he died was not about the stock market. It was about our life together. And I was very attached to my brother. And so naturally, the lesson I got from him was about that attachment, about how to look at that attachment, you know. And my mother, you know, she and I had a very cat and dog fight relationship. It was, we were like little cat fights our whole life.
Till the end.
Till the end. Yes, yes. And then the relationship, as you know, got resolved. And of course, my lesson from her would be about resolve. And it wouldn't, again, be about the stock market or how to save money or what to do in my life. It was about resolve. So every lesson that I learned was it had to do with my relationship with those people. Very, very personal.
Yeah, death was like your teacher. You say this in the book. Death is your teacher. And that's an old, they say, you know, Don Juan and the whole Yaqui wisdom thing. You may know that, the Toltec wisdom. He says, live as if death is over your right-hand shoulder. And I always thought that was very, very important because it's not morbid. It makes you appreciate life even more. And like you talk about regrets.
For sure.
I want you to talk about that whole thing with regret. We got to take a commercial break. But I want you to come back and talk about that thing with regret. And then I want you to tell a story about your dad. We're talking to Margo Lemark. Her book is super cool. It's called Light in the Morning. I am Pharmacist Ben. We'll be back with more of Margo Lemark right after this. We're back on the Bright Side. I'm Pharmacist Ben. We're talking to Margo Lemark about her book, Light in the Morning. So before we went to break, Margo, you said something. I was going to actually ask you about this. There's a you have a really, when you tell the story about your mom, there's a really interesting point you make about the relationship between death and regret. Would you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. My mother's chapter was the hardest one for me to write somehow, and I almost had to leave it out because I could not express the pain of our relationship to the reader enough so that the resolve in the end would make sense. And it was my book was stalled for 3 years.
You did it well.
Because it was so difficult. Yeah, thank you.
You did it well. You did it well.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Well, I kept going because it becomes one of the most important chapters. And as I said, my mother and I had a very catfight relationship. And right at the very end of our relationship, she resolved the whole relationship. And just in one conversation, I didn't even realize it, but it's the last time I saw my mother, and I walked away from her feeling like 100 pounds lighter. I couldn't even tell you how I felt after that conversation. Well, I never saw her again. And so the pain of that death was, of course, huge, but it was so much easier on me because she resolved the relationship. And so I realized that most of the pain of death is regret. And it was a huge lesson for me because I didn't have this agonizing, unresolvable pain of, I wish I would have told her I loved her. Oh, I wish I could go back and say this, and I wish I could apologize. There was none of that regret. And so that chapter becomes very important because I think all of us have relationships that really need resolving. And if that person were to die without it resolved, it is going to eat you alive because there is nothing you can do. It just eats you up. And it's so important to resolve these relationships. And so what I have done, and this is what I mean by every one of these lessons has changed how I live. What I have done as a result of that is every relationship I have, if there's some misunderstanding somewhere, I will talk all night long. I will call the person. I'll go to their house. I will do whatever it takes to resolve that misunderstanding so that
that's
there's
awesome.
None of that. Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
That's awesome. You know, it strikes me that your parents were really amazing. And by the way, I actually... You brought me to tears with the chapter about your mother. So just so you know, you did her great. And with that, what that reminds me is that your mother was like the heart, and then your dad was like your soul. That's kind of the feeling I got. That's the feeling I got. So the stuff about your dad, that was just, that was amazing. So tell us a little bit about what he meant to you. And then tell us a little bit, just real quickly, because we're going to run out of time. I got some more things I want to ask you. Tell a little bit about seeing his body.
Okay. Well, my dad was, just to put it briefly, what everybody described him as a saint. He was just so highly evolved, and every word that came out of him was so profound and loving and beautiful. I learned so much from him, but I took it for granted. I didn't know he was such a saint. It was my everyday life with him, and he just had a countenance about him that was absolutely just serene and wonderful. I And he taught me so much.
Meditation.
He's the one that got me on a spiritual path and meditation and, yeah, vegetarian and all kinds of different trips, you know. So
Yogananda.
He's really my spiritual mentor. Pardon me?
Yogananda. He got you.
Yeah, Yogananda. Yeah. Yes. Yes, yes, yes. He was into Yogananda. And so I came home one day from church and he was sitting in his boxer shorts in his lotus position in the living room with the sun shining on him. And he had a tomato in one hand and a carrot in the other. And I said, Dad, what are you doing? And he goes, shh, I'm trying to get into samadhi.
That's great.
I mean, whose dad
great.
Does that, right?
And how old were you? What dad does that, right? How old
yeah,
were you?
I was five, I think, or
you
something.
You were five. Yeah,
yeah,
that's
mesmerized.
Amazing. And
yeah.
So when you went to the, you heard he died and you went to see him in the morgue, in the hospital. So tell us that story.
Okay. So when I didn't want to go see him because there was an ice storm and I couldn't get to him for 5 days. And so by the time I got there, everyone said he's not going to want you to see him like this because he'll have been decayed and stuff like that. So I told the funeral home, I'm not going to view my father. And they said, you have to. He hasn't been positively identified. And I'm like, oh, my God. So I went in kind of nervous. And I'll tell you, the funeral director opened up the door to this long room, and he was on a gurney at the end of the room. It was like the room was golden. I don't know how else to describe it. There was just such a feeling in the room. And I walked up to him, just sort of mesmerized, and I got on a little stool because I'm short, and I had to look down at him. And when I looked at his face, I have never seen anything so beatific in my life.
Wow.
There was a light coming off of his face about a foot out, like physical light. Like you see, you know, when you see pictures of saints with that light around them,
yeah.
The aura kind of, this is what he had. It was, I've never in all the death experiences I've had, in all the funeral home people I've seen, never seen it. And there he had all this light coming off him and there was no decay. And he had, I want to say smile, but it was beyond a smile. He had this look on his face like I've never seen on an earthly human being. I've never seen that before. And I just, the tears, I had such tears of joy. It was an ecstatic, exalted experience for me just to see his face in death.
That's so beautiful.
Yeah. And what I got from when I saw his face was, because I saw his whole life add up to that very moment.
Mm.
And I saw that at every given moment, we have the choice to love open-heartedly or not. And when we get to the end of our life, it's all going to add up to the choices we made at every single moment.
That's the best. That is the best. That man, if you just live your life that way, with that just one sentence or just that one idea, you'll have a great life. And of Course in Miracles, it says that all our suffering is caused by not appreciating or not loving what is, not loving what shows up. And it's that idea.
That's
at any moment,
right.
we have a choice. At any moment, and we have zillions, countless of moments to do that.
Yes.
And then it all adds up.
Yes.
It accrues,
yes.
Like you say. So that leads me to my last question here, because we only have a couple minutes. So we're dealing with, obviously, a historic, crazy time. People are freaking out. They're killing themselves. They're committing suicide. They've got anxiety and depression and all kinds of stuff going on. What can we learn from what you learned by dealing with death and by dealing with all these folks? What can we learn? What can we take home? What can we use to help us get through what we as a culture and as a society and as a community are going through now?
As a culture, we have to live the golden rule. We have to put ourselves in other people's shoes and feel it and love each other. Love open-heartedly. We have to make that choice to love open-heartedly through the differences. Everybody's different. Everybody thinks differently. Everybody grew up differently. We have different set of circumstances, but we have to love each other. We are all human beings, and we have to support each other. A lot of people are dying. We have to learn to grieve properly, and I've got a chapter in my book. It's two pages called Good Grief, and it's kind of the mechanics of how important it is to grieve. And we have to support each other in their grief. I mean, it's a really rough time, and now we have to hang on tight to an open heart inside of ourselves and love, period.
Do you think people are dealing with unresolved issues, unresolved grief or unresolved sadness, and that's causing some of this problem, some of these issues?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. I think, Yes, I do.
So by grieving, when you say grieving, we could actually be grieving for our lost childhoods or the people we've lost, or even a lost sense of what's, you know, we'll never go back to how we were. So there's a kind of grief that's going on there, right? A historic grief.
Correct. Yes. And when the heart breaks open in grief, a lot of different grief comes out. And that's why it's really important to let yourself be there. You don't want to stew in it, but you want to go through it naturally, because it also naturally lightens up. You know, after you grieve and you talk about it and stuff, you feel so much lighter.
Yeah.
It's because you resolve that part of you. So it's a really important process.
Yeah, a lot of religions have like a 7-day period where you just sit and grieve, or a 10-day period, a 30-day period, where you don't do anything but grieve, and you kind of get it out of your system. If you never get it out of your system, it's always there, like a splinter in your mind, as they say.
Right, but it's such an important process of incorporating that person into our heart. It's really our connection with the divine, like I say in that chapter called Good Grief. It's our connection to the divine, because as we grieve and remember that person, we incorporate them in our heart, and that's where they stay eternally, and that's where we have that eternal bond to the divine, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, they're never really dead in a way. They're always accessible
in a way.
That's beautiful.
No. The last line of my book.
we're out of time, Margo. Thank you so, so much for your book and for your work and for being on the program. Really enjoyed getting to know you, and really enjoyed having you on. God bless.
Thank you, Ben. I've enjoyed it too. You too.
All right, Margo. Take care. That's Margo Lenmark. Her book is Light in the Morning, and that's MOURNING, Morning. Super cool book, and easy to read, and very, very wise. And just if you have a chance to get it, I highly encourage you to do that. All right, that's all the time we have for today. Thanks for listening to The Bright Side. I am Pharmacist Ben. Have a wonderful, beautiful, awesome, spectacular day. We'll talk to you later. Bye for now.